This is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with E.L. Konigsberg, who is one of the most revered authors in children's literature. She's one of only a handful of authors who won the Newbery Medal twice, and is also the only author to have won the Newbery and been runner-up in the same year, which was in 1968, for the Newbery Medal for her second book, which was From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, and also the Newbery Honor for her first book, Jennifer Hecate Macbeth, William McKinley, and Me, Elizabeth, which is a personal favorite of mine. She had started her career not in children's books, but in science, where she studied chemistry at Carnegie Mellon University and got her master's degree at the University of Pittsburgh. She decided to not pursue science, but did then also take classes in drawing and painting. She won prizes for her artwork, and she decided to also go into writing. Her books are favorites of children around the world, and they include A Proud Taste for Scarlet and Miniver, which is about Eleanor of Aquitaine, The Outcasts of 19 Schuyler Place, and now, most recently, a book called The Mysterious Edge of the Heroic World, which is new from Simon & Schuster. So, Elaine, thank you very, very much for talking with me. Tell me a little bit about this new book.
I think The Mysterious Edge of the Heroic World deals with a child's sense of self-discovery. I think that the core in all of my books deal with a young person's question about his or her identity. When I left graduate school, my husband's work brought us to Florida. At the time, I did not have a teaching certificate, and at that time, I had not finished my research in chemistry, and there was not then a place where a person could get a master's degree in chemistry, and I thought I should teach. However, I didn't have a teaching certificate either, but Miss Pratt had a private girls' school called Bartram, and she took me on. I had grown up in small mill towns in Pennsylvania, had never known anyone who went to private school, really. I knew boys who were behavior problems who went to military school, and I knew that parochial schools were private schools for people of a particular faith, but I thought that when I was going to meet these girls at a private girls' school, at the time it was also a boarding school, that I was going to meet a lot of very, very spoiled young women. And to my surprise and pleasure, I found that these girls were not spoiled. They were asking themselves the same questions that I asked myself growing up in small mill towns in Pennsylvania. Who am I? What makes me the same as everyone else? What makes me different from everyone else? And please accept me for both. They had problems with relationships, with their family, with their friends, with their relatives. Those seemed to me to be the same problems that middle school children still deal with. And in my newest book, The Mysterious Edge of the Heroic Woman, there is a retired opera singer, and she takes the young protagonist named Amadeo Kaplan. She takes him to a Dairy Queen one day. Mrs. Zender is extremely overweight, and she says to this young man, "I have something to tell you." "What?" "Fasten your seatbelt." "Is what you're going to tell me that shocking?" "Well, it may be," but she said, "I was thin once," and he said it, he wasn't particularly surprised. She said, "But I want to tell you something. 90% of who you are is hidden. If you weigh 250 pounds, people see 25 pounds. If you weigh 150 pounds, people see 15 pounds, but it's still only 10%.
Now, when she, this story is very interesting. It has Amadeo and another boy, William, and William's mother is someone who helps people when they take apart their house and start to sell off their belongings. Mm-hmm. So it's very, moving to see the pieces of someone's life, be sorted through. What was it about that imagery that you felt was important to convey to kids?
I think it is a story of relationships. Relationships to possessions, relationships to one's peers, relationships to the older generation. William, Amadeo's friend, appears in an earlier story I wrote. He appears in a short story called With Bert and Ray, which is part of a collection called Throwing Shadows. That story takes place earlier in William's life, 2 years earlier, when his mother was just widowed and was without resources and had to sell off things from a house sale. And then she got involved with two antique dealers who liked her manners and her resourcefulness, and they led her into a career of liquidating estates. And William and Amadeo become friends, and it is their joint work together with his mother in which they cement their friendship.
And they're different. William is more confident, yes?
William is quietly, he's aloof but confident, and Amadeo is a little bit more aggressive. Amadeo has attitude, as they say. But the boys reach an understanding, and the eccentric, retired opera singer is the cement that holds them together.
Yeah, there does seem to be a real intrigue with Mrs. Zender, but from both boys for different reasons. And what about with that? I mean, she certainly has a hidden past that comes out late in the book. What was it about her as a type of person? She's quite sort of eccentric, but very flamboyant in some ways.
Yes, she's spoiled. She's spoiled. She's accustomed to having people, and there are three widows in this book. Interestingly enough, William's mother, a character from another book, The Outcast of 19 Schuyler Place. The art director of in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, his mother reappears. She surprises her son by telling him that when she became widowed, she's going to travel the country in a Winnebago. And he says to her, "Mother, do you know what Buckminster Fuller once said?" And she said, "No." And he says, "Buckminster Fuller once said that there is nothing about a caterpillar that lets you know it's going to become a butterfly." And his mother says to him very quietly, "I always knew I had wings." And I think that 10% that we allow to be revealed, and the boundary between the 90% and the 10%, is perhaps what allows us to tip ourselves into the heroic world.
Do you think children know 10% about adults in their lives?
Do I think children know about 10%? I think so. The backstory, the hidden backstory in this book, deals with a young man who discovers something about his brother. And he said, "I had only thought of my brother in relationship to me. Me and my brother, me and my brother's friends, me and my parents." And I think that is an important part of the maturing process. When you take yourself out of that 90% that you keep inside, that you don't let others touch.
Now, what about with these boys? I mean, where do you see the growth in their characters?
I their realization that there is dimension to people that they have to reach out for.
Now, what about this in comparison, just as a book, how it ties in with other writing that you've done? I mean, it was interesting to me that this related sort of to the world of possessions, and there is even, you know, art-related components to this too, of valuable possessions and things like that. Where do you see connections with some of the other books that you've done or characters?
I think it has a lot to do with discovery about oneself, self-discovery. I think it has to do with Amadeo, the young protagonist, wants to discover something that has been lost for a very long time until he discovers it, and his heroes are the young goatherd who by accident discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls and didn't know it, or the four teenagers who fell into a hole in southern France and turned out to be the caves of Lascaux. He wants to be a discoverer, and he's in the process of discovering self, discovering friendship.
Which is, I guess, with William, that was part of the first attraction, because William has discovered a valuable art piece when the book begins.
Yes, William and his mother in the first story with Burton Ray, because of his mother's confidence and perhaps we can say the butterfly that was in her, has enough faith in her intuition and does enough research to, in an estate, buy from the estate a screen that no one wanted. She buys the screen herself, and with William's help, they sell it to the Freer Gallery for an enormous profit. And it establishes her reputation, and it gives her a kind of confidence that she had not had before in her own merits and intuition.
Let me ask you about your relationship with kids over the years as different books have come out. I mean, certainly in the publishing world, you had instant recognition, which was something that just made things very different in terms of that. But how did kids react to you from the beginning?
I have I have a collection of letters that I've gotten over this year. 2007 marks the 40th anniversary of the publication of my first book. I think my readers are more sophisticated. I think that they get the story beneath. I think that they no longer read only for plot. I think they're deeper readers. And I think that there's been many, many changes in children's book publishing, and a lot of them deal with the higher profile we have. I say we write with a bigger pencil now.
In what way?
In what way? They're more available. Part of that in 40 years ago when I first started writing, children's paperbacks were unknown. Now they're available, which makes them more available to children. There are more outlets. I don't mean just the outlets that are available on the internet. I mean the chain bookstores, and I mean that retailers handle children's books now. They used to not be nearly as available as they are now.
Or as knowledgeable about that part of the bookstore.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about something called Talk that you did,
yes,
which was
where you
talk to grown-ups.
Yes, a children's book writer speaks to grown-ups. And that the opportunity to lecture gives me a chance to consolidate my thinking. Some of your questions today, for which I thank you, are... having written talks allow me to consolidate and think about issues that I can deal with both as a writer and a reader. For example, I I value solitude a lot, and I think that we need solitude, and I am concerned very often with multitasking, and I say that we need margins around our lives to enter deeper into thought space.
It's interesting because one of the things that has been talked about lately with kids and their life experience is that because of the internet and because they have so many things kind of that they're interacting with simultaneously, that one of the things that doesn't happen is downtime.
Mm-hmm. My late husband used to call it belly button observation time, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that as a result, what you end up with to some degree is kids who don't have a chance. I mean, do you see kids interested in writing, for example, or are wanting to pursue the creative process now in the way that you have in the past?
I think that the want to write is still there. It's probably still a limited number.
Let me ask you one more question, which is, what are you working on next? And also, do you have several books, you know, planned ahead when you work? Do you have different characters who want some space?
I work on one book at a time. I have just finished The Mysterious Edge of the Heroic World, and I have thoughts. I always tell myself, Elaine, if you're going to talk it out, you're not going to write it out. And so I let myself work pretty hard before I begin discussing it. And everyone respects that. It is related to what I say, our need for margins of time.
And what would you tell kids who are interested in going into writing?
I usually tell them one thing. I use one word, I say finish. And there's a lot behind that word. It means that you have the discipline to apply the seat of your pants to the seat of your chair and get to that next transition, to get to that next paragraph. I always tell them finish.
That's a good way to end, maybe. Well, Elaine, thank you very much for talking with me. E.L. Konigsberg, the author of the new book, The Mysterious Edge of the Heroic World, from Simon & Schuster. Thank you very much.